So what, says Miles Davis, and I'm saying, I'll tell you, so what? We're building bridges, not walls. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
Latino communities rebuilt Baltimore. Now they're left to grieve their dead amidst Baltimore bridge collapse. Maximilian Alvarez, investigative reporter and editor-in-chief of The Real News, one of the reasons Latinos were involved in the horrendous industrial workplace catastrophe, the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, is because, says Lucia Islas, president of Comité Latino Baltimore, we do the work because we come for a better life, and in the process, we make the country better. Ah, where is the love? Where are the safety and health precautions for Latino immigrants who do the work? Maximilian, there's certainly a great deal to unpackage in that statement from the Comité Latino Baltimore, but your thoughts on the heart and soul, literally and figuratively, at the center of the accident, the loss of six immigrant workers' lives, and so much, we thank you for your reportage constantly and for being our guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor to be back on the show and an honor to be in this struggle with y'all, because I really appreciate the coverage that you all do here. And I just want to second what Sister Lucia Islas said, whom you quoted. I actually had the honor of sitting down with Sister Lucia along with other leaders of immigrant right and Latino justice organizations here in the city, including Ricardo Ortiz from the Centro de los Derechos del Migrante, Susana Barrios, who is the vice president of the Latino Racial Justice Circle, Carlos Crespo, who volunteers with the Centro de Apoyo para la Superación del Inmigrante, or CAPSI, and Sister Lucia herself, who is the president of the Comité Latino del Baltimore. And also these folks volunteer with so many other organizations. And I thought it was really powerful and beautiful to sit down with them, with my own family, with my own foster daughter, who herself is undocumented from Honduras and is feeling a lot of things about this story. But we sat down with these incredible human beings and members of the Baltimore Latino community on Friday, and my bilingual interview with them will be out at the Real News Network this week. But I mentioned that by way of answering your question, because I think it was really significant and beautiful and powerful to be sitting there with these leaders of their different organizations. You know, they're not competing with each other. They don't see each other as competitors in some sort of NGO marketplace. They are members of a community who are trying to help. And they came together. They welcomed us. We sat together at El Taquito Mexicano in Baltimore, a restaurant in Fells Point. And we talked for hours about what they had been doing to help the community, what they had been hearing from others in the community, what we knew about the families of the men who were killed on the Key Bridge collapse Tuesday. And we talked through their respective and collective efforts to provide support for those families, including fundraisers. And I just wanted to pass on to everyone listening that while the Latino Racial Justice Circle did originally start the GoFundMe fundraiser for the families of the six Key Bridge victims, the immigrant construction workers who I'll talk about in a second, who perished in that catastrophic bridge collapse, the Latino Racial Justice Circle was quickly overwhelmed by the response, the generosity, the solidarity from people in Baltimore and around the country. And so they actually have handed off fundraising efforts to the city. And you can actually donate to that fund that is being run through the city. It's at the Baltimore Civic Fund. It's called the Key Bridge Emergency Response Fund. The Latino Justice, Racial Justice Circle organizers wanted to be as transparent as possible. They wanted to make sure that an entity like the city could handle all the donations that were coming in. So if folks are listening to this and they want to help and want to donate to those families, they can go to that, to the Baltimore Civic Fund. But to build on that, What we know is that, I mean, everyone knows by now, right, that the iconic Francis Scott Key Bridge here in Baltimore, you know, a critical thoroughfare connecting the port of Baltimore to the rest of the country in so many ways. You know, it was a very busy bridge, but a shipping vessel called the Dolly, which is actually operated by a Danish shipping giant, Maersk, but it is a ship that is registered in Singapore, and it is operated by 22 Indian crew members who, as we speak, I believe are still stuck on that ship right now. And that's a whole other labor situation we got to talk about. You know, maritime union folks here in the United States have described to me the conditions of workers on ships like that as, and I quote, quote, floating sweatshops, where, you know, workers are in international waters, you know, living and working on ships like these with no escape, and a more horrifying work situation I can scarcely imagine. But that, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg here. But what we know is that, you know, around 1:30 in the morning on Tuesday, that ship, the Dolly, experienced a catastrophic power failure and a propulsion failure. It issued a Mayday call that gave emergency responders about 90 seconds to try to respond and rush to the Key Bridge, which police officers did, and credit to them. They did save lives by stopping traffic from going onto that bridge. But you can actually hear the police dispatcher or the scanner from that morning. You can hear the voices saying, you know, is anyone going to tell the workers on those bridge? Can someone tell the foreman? And you can hear one voice getting increasingly desperate, asking if someone's going to go tell the workers. And one officer is saying he's holding up traffic, waiting for backup. And once backup comes, he'll go and tell the workers on the bridge. And then the next voice you hear is a frankly shocked and horrified voice saying the bridge just collapsed. And so when fast forward to later that day, I was, you know, with my colleagues, Kayla Rivara and Jocelyn Dombrowski here at The Real News. We got in our car. We drove as quickly as we could to get as close as we could to the Key Bridge. And we were seeing reports from other journalists in the city who were there at there's a gas station right next to the entrance to one of the entrances to the bridge. It's a Royal Farms gas station. And so we saw a couple of posts online that a construction worker named Jesus Campos, who worked for Bronner Builders. This is the non-union contractor that employed the six men who have perished on that bridge, the eight who fell into the water that we know of. You know, I saw that Jesus Campos was there talking to people, and yet the whole time we were driving, I hadn't heard anyone ask the question that was front on all of our minds as we were driving there, which is, did those workers get a warning? And it seemed patently obvious that they did not. And Jesus Campos, when I did speak to him on Tuesday, said, no, they did not. And so, you know, what we currently know is that, you know, these that there are six men who have been pronounced dead, two who originally fell into the water were recovered from the water. One was sent to emergency services to receive emergency care at a hospital. And the other, who reportedly refused service and who I've been told by members of the community did so because he did not have health insurance, which, like, if that proves to be true, like, a more a horrifying indictment of our country and our health system, I can scarcely imagine. Although I just came back from East Palestine, Ohio, where, you know, fellow workers have been poisoned by Norfolk Southern, and, like, they're developing all these rare and awful health conditions, and they're losing their health care. They can't work, and the country's completely forgotten about them. So there's a whole tangle of awful things here. But I just wanted to quickly name the workers who we know passed,
please,
and then I promise I'll be quiet. So far, we have been able to identify five of the six men, all immigrant workers, all, you know, reportedly, you know, like, honest, hardworking men, family men, some of whom just welcomed new children into their families this past year. And those families will never be whole again. Mm. Those young children will never know their fathers, right? But what we do know is that of the six who have been pronounced dead, we've identified five, including Menor Yasir Suazo Sandoval, age 38, who immigrated to the U.S. from Honduras; Miguel Luna, age 49, who immigrated here from El Salvador; Jose Minor Lopez, age 35, originally from Guatemala; Dorlian Ronial Castillo Cabrera, age 26, also immigrated from Guatemala. Alejandro Hernandez Fuentes, age 35, originally born in Mexico. And the sixth unidentified victim is believed to be a Mexican national as well. And so our hearts are absolutely broken for those families, for our community. And you know, like the impacts of this bridge collapse are going to, you know, ripple throughout our economy, throughout our city, throughout our region for months and weeks to come. But the ripple effects of losing those fathers, those sons, those, you know, community members who were who were just trying to make a life for themselves, and who are at the moment, you know, people like us, people like those men are currently being vilified by part of the country that's been poisoned by Donald Trump into believing that we are coming to this country to, quote, poison the blood of this nation and ruin this nation. And yet, what are we actually doing? We are working to provide for our families like you guys are. We're filling your potholes in the middle of the night so you can have a safe drive to work in the morning. We're cleaning your office buildings at night. We're packaging your food. We are just like you. These men were just like you. They may not have spoken the same language as you, but they are just like you in every other respect.
Let me ask you this. I assume, and I'm interested, this is contracting out by the municipality, these immigrant workers, these hard-working people who risk their lives and have lost their lives. They're working in a non-union context. And I'm just wondering what you know about Brawna Builders and the whole process of what may have heretofore been done by union workers, the municipalities contracting out specifically to places like Brawna. Is that the situation there? What can you tell us about Brawna? And of course, continue this overall reality that both union workers are getting screwed by contracting out, and similarly, the immigrant workers are then employed with virtually no benefits, health benefits, time off, and so on, which is analogous to even the more sophisticated unionized workers that you referred to earlier from East Palestine, the railroad workers. So give us a sense of that.
Right. I mean, and I'm not bringing it up for nothing. Like, I literally got back to Baltimore 24 hours before this bridge collapsed from East Palestine. I've been covering it all year. I've been interviewing the folks there because I was interviewing railroad workers before that. And they were all telling me that something like Norfolk Southern's derailment in East Palestine was going to happen if the railroads kept cutting costs, cutting corners, you know, like serving their shareholders and stripping away vital safety and maintenance measures and all that kind of stuff. And lo and behold, East Palestine happened. And we still have over 1,000 train derailments a year in this country. We've done virtually nothing to address the systemic issues on the railroads that have caused derailments like East Palestine. And so, like, the resonances were very clear to me, and it wasn't just me. The first texts that I got on Tuesday morning about the bridge were from other community members in East Palestine. They were seeing what was happening. I had just been there with an incredible coalition of folks who are trying to pressure President Biden to declare East Palestine a federal disaster area so that so that, like, he could unlock federal resources, including guaranteeing folks their immediate government-funded health care, which they desperately need. We heard about all the health ailments that they are racking up. To anyone listening, I beg you, just go listen to what they're going through. They are not okay. They have been left behind, and companies like Norfolk Southern are getting away scot-free with it. And so I got back to Baltimore, and then this bridge collapses. And again, like, I think one of the most obvious things to me and a lot of folks in East Palestine was not that Baltimore is not East Palestine. The bridge collapse is not the train derailment. These are different situations. However, I think the common thread that I am seeing, not just in Baltimore and East Palestine, but that I'm seeing and hearing from people who are affected by all of this corporate 40 plus years of corporate domination, of deregulation, disinvestment, the devaluation of labor and life itself, the union busting and all that kind of stuff, serving the interests of Wall Street, that has put us in a cauldron of, you know, like situations that like this, whether it's the Baltimore Bridge collapse or the East Palestine derailment, Boeing planes falling out of the sky, the BP oil spill, right? I mean, the quality of service of everything getting worse. Like, that's what happens when you let a few conglomerates like dominate everything, and you let the oligarchy essentially dictate the rules of our society. And so I think it's going to get a lot worse in this country before it gets better, because the chickens are coming home to roost. Like, the infrastructure is crumbling away. Those layers of maintenance and service and protection that existed in vital industries like shipping and railroading, you can't just rebuild those overnight. So, like, we're going to be at risk for a while, and I hope that we wake up soon enough. But the whole reason that East Palestine and Baltimore felt so connected to me is because the whole social contract of this in this society was supposed to be between us, the citizens, labor, business, government, and to essentially ensure that, like, all of this dangerous stuff could be operating in our backyards, whether they be massive bomb trains passing through our backyards at night or these massive shipping vessels passing through our water, you know, like in our own rivers, right? All of that was only permitted so long as there were nonprofit driven systems in place designed to prevent things like this from happening in the first place. So the very fact that they are happening is the problem. Now, what we know about these workers and Bronner builders, to go back to that part of your question, I would point folks to a great piece by Robert Kuttner, which he was recently published in the American Prospect. And Robert writes in that piece, quote, "The federal Davis-Bacon Act requires prevailing wages to be paid on public construction contracts. In practice, that has been interpreted to mean union wages and union contractors. Maryland has its own state Davis-Bacon Act, and so does Baltimore County. But Bronner Builders, which got the contract, is a non-union contractor. It should never have received this contract at all. Union sources tell me that misclassification is rampant in this kind of work, and that it's likely that these workers were being paid as independent contractors. That would be doubly illegal," end quote. So, like, I wanted to emphasize that, because your point, your question is really important, Mimi, that, like, there's a larger story here. Like, what I've heard about Bronner Builders so far is kind of mixed. Some people tell me they've had good experiences with them. Some people have told me they have not. So I want to do more investigating into them. But again, you're asking the right question, which is, why was a non-union contractor employing, you know, these immigrant workers that got a contract from the state of Maryland to fill these potholes? And why were the workers doing that job marooned on that bridge in the middle of the night with these mega ships passing beneath their feet with no direct line to emergency dispatch services in case something like this happened? Like, that's what I'm talking about when I say these layers of security, these layers of maintenance, and the kind of things that we've called, like, government red tape or bureaucracy in the past, the kind of things that would ensure that, like, a union crew or a city working crew or a state crew would be working on that bridge, and a foreman would have a direct line to emergency services. Like these are the kinds of questions that we're asking too late, because these men are already dead. But the contractor-contractee relationship, I'm not saying it's always bad. You know, you always got a contract work out in some cases. But what I'm saying is that over 40 years of, like, neoliberal policy that have leaned on contractors as a way to sort of outsource so many functions and jobs that used to be government jobs in the first place, like, this is the kind of situation you end up in, not just with those workers on the key bridge working in the middle of the night with no direct line to emergency services, but you also end up with contractors throughout the supply chain across this country exploiting immigrant labor and having, like, very little accountability for it. That's why you end up finding migrant children younger than my foster daughter working in Hyundai parts supplying plants in Alabama, or cleaning bone saws in meatpacking plants in the Midwest, or picking tomatoes
for Wendy's and their cheeseburgers in places like Florida right now as we speak. Like, that's the contractor kind of, that way the contractor relationship is exploited. So, like, I want people to understand that I'm not saying contractors in general are always bad, but, like, we should be questioning more how we have used contractors to essentially create the kind of conditions where workers are being exploited, where they are, where contractors and subcontractors are taking advantage of this kind of system to take advantage of workers who will work for the least amount of pay with the least amount of protections, so on and so forth. There's a lot wrapped up in this Baltimore bridge collapse beyond just a propulsion failure.
Not to mention the irony of the Francis Scott Keyes bridge. And all I see when I, in my mind's eye, is Colin Kaepernick taking the knee over that horrific piece, the Star Spangled Banner, which was sung during the height of the Black Lives Matter movement, the collapse of that bridge. Well, you know, you're going to come back for sure. I know it. And we're going to work together to continue to expose this. But let's be absolutely, absolutely clear and go back to the statement by Ms. Islas, and that is, where is the love? Where are the safety and health precautions for Latino immigrants who do the work, the immigrant workers who built and rebuilt Baltimore and throughout this country and are being mercilessly exploited? So that's what we're talking about. Make no mistake about it. We're not talking about the wrongness of jobs going to immigrant workers. Quite the contrary. We're just talking about making sure that they have the health and safety precautions that all workers do, and including the unionized workers who are a long way from being safe from these horrific industrial accidents. You are wonderful. We are speaking with the editor-in-chief of The Real News, Maximilian Alvarez, who's going to come back as he continues to follow this story, because it is a must. And again, where is the love for our immigrant siblings? They do the work. They've helped build this country, and we owe them. Maximilian, thank you so much for being with us, and you will allow us to continue follow through, right?
Oh, please. Anytime. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's been our pleasure entirely.
This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants. This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants.
Immigrantes!
This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants. This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants.
Immigrantes!
Hola, mi nombre es Alexis Torre Machado. Yo llegué a este país cuando tenía 5 años. Vengo de Uruguay, mi acento lo hace claro. Nací en Montevideo, Aguada será mi barrio. Estos ignorantes no piensan que soy hispano, porque mis ojos azules y porque mi piel es blanco. Confiados, estos racistas empiezan hablando malo de todos los inmigrantes. Los mando para carajo, los gringos no saben la suerte que tienen. Haría cualquier cosa por tener mis papeles. Y ahora tristemente que tenemos este nuevo presidente, ni siquiera voy a ser un temporario residente.
Hello, my name is Alexis Torres Machado. I was raised in Newark, New Jersey ever since I was 5 years old. I'm 22 now. When I was just 11, I discovered the truth about my residence. Mama didn't tell me cause she didn't want me stressing. But my father started talking and he told me it by accident. My mother started panicking like he's too young to handle it. But truly I didn't care cause I didn't really understand it then. Junior year high school is when it started sinking in. I didn't have the same opportunities as my other friends. Study for the permits, then flex and they got licenses. No one in my family had a car, so we just used our legs. That's one thing we couldn't get out of many. So that's not my only complaint, I had plenty. I accepted to the college that I wanted, but I couldn't get no scholarship. Tuition was like $40,000 in a year with no financial aid, even though my family makes less than 30K. Now do the math and please explain how we're supposed to pay. Went to community college, my parents pay out of pocket to this.
This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants. This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants.
Immigrantes!
This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants. This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants.
Immigrantes!
Levántate, tenemos que hacer todo lo que podemos hacer. Cualquier montaña voy a mover.
I got my associate's degree. I took a couple years off and I started to teach. I taught algebra to students from Central and South America who never had a chance, so they took the shot like a camera and came into this country with nothing else but some hope. Maybe a couple bucks in the clothes and they back at most. They can't cry on me cause they didn't know how to cope. I told them to keep believing, I let my story unfold. It took 12 years for someone to finally give a damn. When Obama passed that, God finally had a chance. Now I'm going back to college with a full right scholarship. You are affecting lives. This is not just politics, cansado. No quiero tener miedo. Que me quiten de lo que amo y quiero. Que me quiten de mi familia, amigos y todo lo que conozco. Es todo lo que me acuerdo. Queremos cambio en serio. Y nada loco, tampoco justo y bueno. Es suficiente, mi gente, no tenga miedo. Lo que creemos, hacemos, unidos juntos podemos.
This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants. This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants.
Inmigrantes.
This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants. This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants.
Inmigrantes.
Levántate, tenemos que hacer todo lo que podemos hacer. Cualquier montaña voy a mover, cualquier pared se puede romper.
This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants. This is for my immigrants, for my immigrants, for my immigrants.
Inmigrantes.
I'm Amy Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We are building bridges and telling you to educate, agitate, and organize to empower we, the people, for another world is possible, and we are the ones who can make it so, and for a free, free Palestine from the river to the sea. Thank you for listening.